I think one thing I want to say, I think of it as a this coming together, and some of you may know each other a little bit, or maybe you don't, but it's a what I call an ad hoc sangha. So we're an ad hoc sangha today, and that's important. I mean, we're a little community today of practitioners, and our very presence, we come from our own reasons and so forth, but once we're here, we're here for each other as well. And just to take that in, that by being here, just by being here, we're supporting each other's practice. And we will be doing today in, I guess what I'll call more or less silence. And meaning, by silence, meaning the opportunity to relinquish unnecessary talking. There'll be opportunities for question and answer, and there may be moments around lunch or whatever where some there might be need for some necessary talking. But it's a gift, I find. Sometimes people at the beginning, doesn't feel like a gift to be silent. But if you do it enough, it becomes such a precious luxury, where we can just be quiet and be with ourselves and be receptive and listen to ourselves, listen to what's going on, and reconnect in that way, and not have to be our social selves, because our social selves usually has a lot of baggage with it. And so we can let that baggage just sit for a while. So I'm going to talk about sort of this morning is going to be focused a little bit more towards, well, introduction and looking at physical, talking about and some teaching about physical pain and practice. And then this afternoon we'll be adding more about emotional pain and practice with that. The title of this is Don't Waste Your Pain, and I'll say more about that. I found this title a few years ago. I was in a bookstore looking at some book, and I don't remember the actual title of the book I was looking at, but I turned it over, and in big letters it said, Don't Waste Your Pain, and I said, oh, that's great. I'm going to make a talk out of that. And so I have made a talk out of that, and now I have this day long using that. And so that's going to be, I'll talk about what that means, and it may be obvious if you're familiar with Buddhist teachings. it will be obvious what that means, but I want to get into more depth about that, because no matter what we know about the Buddhist teachings, we tend to actually be in struggle with our pain. And so the teachings here is that our pain is our teacher. Our pain is an opportunity. And our pain is an inevitable part of our experience of being alive. And that is what I just said is known as the first noble truth. So we're going to be exploring this, and really what the teaching offers is not a getting rid of pain, but a new way of being with pain. It offers in a way a revolutionary new way to be with or relate to our experience. And as some of you may already know, there's ways in which the practice may seem counterintuitive, or at the very least, counter to everything we've been practicing before, our old conditioning and what we learn in the culture. And as a little bit of a explanation or even a caveat, I want to be clear that there are what I call two levels of work. I'm working on now, well, both physical and emotional pain. And I'm calling the two levels the conventional level and the psycho-spiritual level. And I think obviously today we're working with what I'm calling the psycho-spiritual level. But the conventional level is extremely important and equally valid. And the truth of the matter is both of these are happening. We can work with these both simultaneously. So what I mean by conventional level with physical pain is that it means we need to attend to the body. It may mean we need medical attention. It may mean we need treatment and look at various physical causes. And that's good and important. And for emotions, conventional means we may need to look at our situations, our relationships, and the sort of the context or content of whatever our emotional upset is. For example, if we are dealing with anger, it's not just about being mindful of anger, which is extremely important. We'll maybe talk about that. But it may mean you need to address a situation. You may need to learn assertiveness. You know, there's all that level of things. And then the psycho-spiritual level is the level of, always the level of what is happening now. What is happening now? What are you experiencing now? And how are you relating to it? How are you responding to it? What is your what is essentially your relationship to being alive? Your relationship to feelings, emotions, thoughts, and so forth. So it's always about the here and now. And it's about, as I said before, it's about the possibility of learning a new way. In some ways it's a new way, but I would say actually more accurately, it's to reveal our deep capacity for being with it in a way that is much more freeing and brings much more ease. To give you an example, one reason I'm saying this is because I do this kind of thing and then people say, but shouldn't you go to a doctor or something? Or should you just be mindful? No, be mindful and go to a doctor. They are not mutually exclusive. And so I'll just give you an example. My chronic pain is around arthritic stuff. I have some arthritic, some back and other joints. So I work with it in terms of looking at diet, gluten sensitivity. I do stretching. I take anti-inflammatories, conventional level, all good. Psycho-spiritual level. When I'm feeling, I can feel a little bit right now. How am I relating to it? What am I doing to it? Am I adding on to it? Some of you already referred to this. The way we add on to how we actually create what the Buddha meant when he was talking about suffering. How we create that, what do we do that? What am I doing with that? Am I bringing tension and fear and reactivity, or am I bringing openness and allowing, softness and sensitive attention, perhaps compassion? So actually this just happened to me this week. I was giving a talk and someone said, you know, it's enough, you know, okay, it's good to be mindful and just pay attention to it, but when do you take action? And I'm like, again, take action mindfully. So these, you know, begin more and more as we practice to be a simultaneously self-supporting. You can't actually make choices in the conventional level unless you have the wisdom of the psycho-spiritual level to help you. Otherwise, you're reactive, you're doing it out of fear, and so forth. So that's where we're going with this. So another thing, this topic, you know, you can say, you know, working with physical and emotional pain, as if it's a special topic in the Buddha Dharma. You know, sometimes think, okay, well, I'll learn about that and then I'll go on with the real practice. Or maybe people think, and I've heard this over the years, you know, if I could only get rid of my pain or my difficulties, then I could really practice. This is the fertile ground, and in some sense the only fertile ground, and it is the fertile ground that the Buddha talked about, that is our practice. It is the whole of the path. Our relationship with our experience, our life, our suffering, and our freedom from suffering. Again, the Buddha said, which if you've been around long enough, you've heard this, I teach one thing and only one thing, suffering and the end of suffering. So, today, I'm teaching about the whole path, in a nutshell. And all the other teachings are built upon this, of the Buddha Dharma. And no life is free from pain. And we're again learning that we can be free with pain, not, we will not be free of pain, but we can learn to be free with pain. So if you're looking, and I didn't sound like anybody here was doing that, but it happens a lot, I'm looking for this magic bullet where I'm going to escape the more painful, unpleasant, uncomfortable aspects of life. What we're learning here, and this is the one I was referring to earlier of a new capacity, is one of a, you might say, radical openness and radical acceptance of what is, of who you are, and of what you're experiencing. And you can learn, and I will say, you know, some more technical or maybe or specific things about working with pain, but this is the essential shift. And so the question is, of course, how do we make this essential shift? You know, again, in the Buddha teaching, it's basically that we have this capacity for this kind of freedom and peace and openness of heart. But it's our ongoing misunderstanding, it's being stuck in our old conditioning, and it's ignorance. And ignorance in the Buddhist teachings is really an unawareness of what is true, is what ignorance means. So we get caught around and around and again in learned patterns. We don't remember learning them, but learned patterns of suffering, of resistance and of struggle, round and around. Everybody knows that in your life. That round and around is what is called samsara, the wheel of samsara. So we are breaking out of the wheel of samsara into something new and deeper and fresher and more profound. So our pain, whether it's physical or emotional, we tend to, in this culture, think pain means in a sense that something is wrong, I'm wrong, something, I'm being punished, I did something wrong, it shouldn't be happening to me, and all these different things. But if we look at it instead, that pain is an invitation to pay attention. That's what pain is. Correct. The body is saying, pay attention to me. The heart is saying, pay attention to me. And we will be looking at that possibility. Pay attention, wake up, open, and ultimately love me. So there is wisdom in the pain instead of it's something bad I have to get rid of. And there's wisdom in it, and it's also an opportunity to apply wisdom and compassion. You might say it's a call of the body and the heart and the soul to us. And I have a wonderful story, which today will be the first time I shared it, about this, coming up shortly. After a few more comments. So, what I'm getting at, and again, you may know this somewhat intellectually, but maybe you don't know it to the fullness of this. And I hope you go away from today knowing the fullness of this statement, which I've already been saying. But our relationship to, our approach to, our understanding to our pain is the pivotal place where we see whether we're doing the actual practice that we're given here, or we're just finding new ways to play out the old strategies of our life. And so what are some of the old strategies? Trying to control the uncontrollable. How many people spend a lot of your life doing that? Like other people? You know, if I can control that person, I'll have less pain. That's a futile endeavor. Getting various old strategies related to hoping and fearing and worrying and trying to fix the unfixable, aversive, avoidant, shutting down, endless self-improvement projects, rejecting, blaming, armoring, magical thinking, a thousand variations on this.
Hoarding.
What?
Hoarding.
Hoarding?
Buying things, more books than
yeah,
I need.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, you can find your own ways. So, we, in all the ways we contract, you know, in Buddhism they talk a lot about grasping and clinging. We grasp after and then we cling. Another way to say it is, I like to say, is contraction. So you find body-mind emotional contraction, identification with this, that, I'm this, they're that, da-da-da-da-da, and what I call the battle with reality. This practice is the profound invitation to stop your battle with reality, to recognize how you struggle with reality, and how you can actually live in harmony with what is. Sometimes I think my teaching is all about learning to live in harmony with what is true, with what is. So if you battle with reality, who wins the battle? Do you ever win that battle? No. Reality always wins. And yet we battle with it in terms of our delusive thinking, our this shouldn't be so, I want it to be so, this can't be so, I shouldn't, you know, it goes on and on. Instead of, this is what is, and how do I make a wise choice or decision from here? So our journey is to, we choose to take it. And this is a profound journey, is to break through the fog, the trance, all the ways to discover our true capacity for freedom. So, once again, this approach we have to the pain, difficulty, struggle, and suffering in our life, how we do that will show whether our practice is real and meaningful or whether it's a repetition of old stuff. So, in short, again, what we need to learn, and again this came up in a few things people said, is to recognize and be open to the simple, direct, immediate, real experience of the moment, which is in body sensations, senses, emotions, thoughts, versus what we add on to it. What the real experience is in the moment as it is, and then what we add on to it. The sometimes called the objective reality, more or less, and then the subjective creation of reactivity that we add onto it. So that's kind of a theme for today. Learning mindfulness gives us both a deeper and deeper appreciation, ability, capacity of opening up to being able to just be with things as they are. And it's like this inner spaciousness gets grows and grows and grows. I'll say a little more about that. And then mindfulness also gives us the insight. Mindfulness with investigation gives us the insight to begin to distinguish just the simple experience of reality, which is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. You know, we like pleasant. We don't like unpleasant, and we're kind of about neutral. And then we get to see all, as I've been saying, all the many ways we create all kinds of experiences of anger came up, blame, greed, guilt, the stories, the catastrophic thinking, the tension and contraction. So back again to things as they are. This mindfulness takes us more to what I would call our... This is a Vipassana expression, but I also have a Zen background. takes us what I would call our true nature, which is vast and open and spacious. So that in that more and more we practice that, the more and more we begin to rely on, rest in, and live from this great open spaciousness. So that there's many metaphors used for this. One that I like is if you take a tablespoon of salt, and that tablespoon of salt represents pain. You take that tablespoon of salt and you put it into a glass of water and you drink it. It's pretty awful. Matter of fact, you probably can't drink it. You spit it out. It feels terrible and it's toxic and it's, you know. If you take a tablespoon of that same salt and put it into a pristine, beautiful lake, and take a drink of that, it's fine. Same tablespoon of salt, same amount of pain. That doesn't change, but the container for it changes. We're identified with the pain, and instead we actually begin to see what the container is. We begin to rely on the container instead of identification with the pain. So that's one. And the second one is this reactivity. I can give you a couple examples, and then I'll get into my story I said I would share. First story, one of my own stories, is many years ago, I had been practicing pretty diligently for about 5 years I was actually living in a Zen monastery at the time, and I went to visit a new Tibetan monastery nearby with a couple of friends there who were pretty new to practice, and we went to this is upstate New York, and we went, it was August, we went to sit in the meditation hall there, hot, humid, sweaty, and there had just been a bloom of great big flies, no screens on the window. So we're in the meditation hall, I'm wearing shorts and a tank top, and there are these big, they're not biting flies, I call them house flies on steroids. Like a house fly, but about this big. And so we're sitting there with flies walking all over us. You know, they're trying to get in your nose. And so the first impression, at least mentally, emotionally, is this is the most horrible, awful, disgusting, in a sense, painful experience. And fortunately, I had been practicing long enough that I said, okay, I can see my mind is doing that. But what is the actual experience? And I turned the meditation into what I call little fly feet meditation. So I said, okay, just concentrate on the actual sensations of the flies. And actually, it was not unpleasant. It wasn't pleasant exactly, but it wasn't unpleasant. It was just a sensation. It actually wasn't painful at all. And so as I concentrated on it, I actually had a very lovely meditation. The two people I was with hadn't quite had the experience to make that shift, and they were miserable. I mean, the whole meditation was just this angst and struggle, and it just felt horrible. Was it horrible or wasn't it? And that's, I just wanted to give that actually a certain amount of what we call pain, only a certain amount, what we call pain, when we actually look at it, actually isn't even painful. And that can be a surprise. It's really engaged in this whole story. Now, a certain amount of it is, I would say, highly unpleasant. And I'll talk more about that. But so that's the first example. The second example I want to give is I worked with a woman as a psychotherapist and also stress reduction teacher who had very severe back pain, real back pain. She ended up having a couple surgeries and so forth. And we worked for a long time, and I finally said to her, you know, I really want you to assess how much, I want you to look at this, how much is actual physical unpleasantness and pain, and how much is your mind, is it, your? Let me say, how much of your distress, let me put it that way, is from the actual physical pain, and how much of it is from all your stories and reactivity around it. And she spent, you know, some time reflecting on this, and then she said, you know what, I think it's about 50-50. And I said, that means we have 50% of your distress, at least 50, that we can actually work with and alleviate. And that thing is, if you work with and alleviate that 50%, it actually has an impact on the other 50%. Not necessarily it goes away, but has an impact. So, you know, much of our pain, our physical pain, has a somatized emotional aspect to it. It's also reflecting our reactive chronic patterns. So it's almost impossible to totally separate physical pain from an element of psycho-emotional. So, I do want to stop soon so we can practice. And this is a story I heard that was actually told in India by a wandering monk. And it's kind of a transcript of his story, so I'm going to try to do it a little bit theatrically, as if I'm here telling the story. And he must have been, I didn't hear whether he was or not, but he must have been a Western monk, because you'll see here why. Well, maybe not, but Many years ago, I had this particular pain in my right shoulder. I would sit, pain. I would think, be with the pain. Here I am, being with the pain. Just be the pain. It's not working, you know. Maybe I should do some yoga. Ah, that's better. Ah. Oh no, here it comes. Oh, I'll get one cushion. I'll get two cushions. Three, four. Maybe angle it this way. Maybe angle it that way. Left, right, up, down. Oh no, it's back. Doctor, doctor, osteopath, somebody help me. For 5 years, I had this pain. And I had a very active and ingenious mind that found out every possible way to wiggle out of the fact that pain hurts. And I don't like it. I'm going to add in. So here he's talking about pain and reactivity to pain. Okay. A very obvious truth, and yet I hadn't actually come to that. I hadn't accepted that one. What one glosses over in a few words. I don't like pain. Instead, I had acted on I don't like pain. I hadn't actually examined the experience of not liking pain. I tried to think, well, I should like pain. Pain is good for you. Pain is bad. Make it go away. But I hadn't really looked into I don't like. Resistance, reactivity. And so one day, sitting in meditation, I thought, this is it. It's the showdown. I'm going to sit here for 5 hours and I'm going to get over this thing. So sitting. Pain, pain, wiggle, wiggle. Why did I say that? I'm going to sit here for 5 hours and I'm going to get over this thing. Why did I say that? Why 5 hours? After all, this is the middle way. Moderation and all that. But hours go by, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. 3 hours and 1 minute. And after about 4 hours, I was so sick of this pain. My mind had been through all the various circuits of it, be nice to it, be friendly to it, kill it, and come back. And finally I came back to, oh God, this pain. And finally, finally, the mind just rested. It got tired out, I guess. Eventually, even ignorance gets tired out and has to take a break from being ignorant. And then, instead of ignoring it or repressing it, I actually began to open to it. And without opening to it so that it will go away, or opening to it so that it might take me into some cosmic experience, but instead just, all right. I began to see the sensation throbbing away. It began to appear in my mind as a kind of glowing light, tearing, throbbing, a tearing experience in my shoulder. And because of this choiceless attention to it, I began to notice that, well, there's that, the physical sensation, and then there's this terrible, no, 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 whining, bitter, a whining, bitter voice going on inside me, this feeling of resistance and a kind of bitterness toward my body, a bitterness toward the pain. I don't like it. It shouldn't be happening to me. What did I do? I'm just trying to be peaceful. And this kind of moaning mind, as I contemplated my relationship to the sensation, it became clear to me that there is nothing I could do to this sensation. There's nothing I could do to the sensation, but I could stop beating it with my mind. I began to have this experience of deep regret for all the beatings and the kickings that this mind had imposed upon life, upon this body, upon itself and its thoughts, telling it to shut up, telling it to be this way and that way. I felt like this whole system was like a mangy dog that had never really been loved. that had been told what to do and beaten. In fact, an image arose in my mind of this dog, a kind of mangy, hungry, wolf-looking creature. And I looked at it and wondered, how much longer am I going to keep beating this creature? How much longer am I going to keep beating me? I felt this deep sense of regret that there should be so much intolerance and harshness towards life. And in my mind's eye, I reached out to this creature and I started to pat it and to say, please forgive me. And then this creature turned into a cartoon dog, Scooby-Dooby-Doo. And we started dancing, me and the pain, me and the dog, me and the pain. And then the whole thing just exploded, very gently. And the pain disappeared. It seemed to say, thank you. Finally, I've been knocking on your door for 5 years. Thank you for opening. Thank you for recognizing the problem was, I do not like, I will not accept, I will not open. And once you open, the lesson has been learned. The business is finished. And, of course, the thought might arise, oh, that's how you do it. That's how you do it to bring a particular result. And it is. But the true expression and the true mark of equanimity with the difficult is that it's okay if it stays and it's okay if it goes. And we know if we open that if it stays or if it goes, we are okay. And we can trust that we can be there with it either way. I know you've been sitting here for a while. Let's just sit silently for a minute and then we're going to get up and do some movement and then come back and do some sitting meditation. Just for a minute to tune in.